I hope you're all kind of sitting on the edge of your chair thinking, oh, have a one. Because if I'd entered, I would be, because I get excited about things like that. Not that I've ever won a competition in my life, mind. I think I won a raffle once, a tea caddy made of tin. Anyway, the winners of the competition, sometime after 3 o'clock, there's not just a first prize winner. We've managed to find quite a few prizes because, as I say, the final judging was so difficult, so we've managed to find more prizes than were promised, and we'll be giving a few honourable mentions as well. There were so many really, really close runners-up. Oh, we had such a night doing the judging. Anyway, that's in about an hour's time. If you were listening to the programme yesterday, you'll have heard me mention that one of the featured artists on the programme over the whole weekend, because, of course, I'm here doing tomorrow's programme as well, one of the featured artists is George Hamilton IV, and we have a song from him now, and then another one later. So this one, it's called In the Early Morning Rain. Don't think it is at the moment, though. Well, it's early morning, but not raining.
In the early morning rain, with a dollar in my hand and the naked in my heart, babe, with my pockets full of sand, I'm a long ways from home and miss my loved one so. In the early morning rain, with no place to go, I don't know. Seven set to go. Well, I'm standing on the grass, babe, where the cold winds blow. Oh, the good times all are gone. Yeah, the good times all are past. Oh, but there she goes, my friend. She's rolling now at last. This old airport's got me down. Hey, it's no earthly good to me, 'cause I'm stuck here on the ground, babe, cold and tired as I can be. You can't jump a big jet plane like you can an old freight train, so I best be on my way.
George Hamilton IV in the early morning rain. And there is a George Hamilton V, because I interviewed him a few years ago, and there was a third and a second and a first as well, I suppose. And George Hamilton V is, I think he's in his 20s now, and he's playing the guitar and singing as well. In the early morning rain. Now, this next song, it's not really about rain, but it always reminds me of rain, because this takes me back quite a few years to when I was doing a secretarial course at a college in Manchester. And I was living in Halifax and commuting every day on the train from Halifax to Manchester. And whenever it was sunny in Halifax, it was raining in Manchester. And whenever it was sunny in Manchester, it was raining in Halifax. So basically, whatever day I went, it was raining at one end or the other. And this particular record was, I'm not sure whether it was a single. I know it was on an LP at the time, and it was rather a favourite of mine. And this particular song takes me right back to those days, walking along Deansgate in Manchester, singing this song to myself, Simon and Garfunkel, for Emily, whenever I may find her.
What a dream I had.
pressed in organdy, clothed in crinoline of smoky burgundy, softer than the rain. I wandered empty streets down past the shop displays. I heard cathedral bells tripping down the alleyways. As I walked on, and when you ran to me, your cheeks flushed with the night. We walked on frosted fields of juniper and lamplight. I held your tears. Oh, I love you, girl.
Oh, I love you. Simon and Garfunkel for Emily, Whenever I May Find Her. And if you didn't like that one, you've got very bad taste. That's all I have to say. Got so much mail this week that I'm not possibly going to be able to get through it all. But here's a couple of letters. First of all, Thelma Baker, who lives in Wirral, Merseyside, says she saw my picture in the Radio Times 2 or 3 weeks ago. Gosh, aren't you lucky? Standard blurred Radio Times kind of picture. And she says, would you know if the BBC sell photographs published in the Radio Times, as I'm sure your permission will be required first? Well, A, I've no idea whether they sell pictures in the Radio Times or not. Haven't a clue. You'd have to ask the Radio Times, I suppose. And I'm sure your permission would be required first. I doubt it, Thelma. They never ask my permission about anything else. They just say, hey, you, do this or do that. No, never. It's never a would you mind or anything. So I can't really answer your question, Thelma. I suggest you write to the Radio Times and ask them, OK? Now then, who is this? This is Eddie Williams, who lives in St Austell in Cornwall. And he says, I have a complaint about You and the Night and the Music, and that is when I try to get tapes or recordings of some of the artists that I hear on the programme, I'm unable to obtain them. For instance, I've been trying to get Singers Unlimited and Tutti Camerata, but I can't find any recordings of this group at all. Well, Eddie, you see, the thing is, a lot of the music on You and the Night and the Music are specially recorded sessions, which are unfortunately unavailable commercially. So we can't really help you on that. You'll just have to keep on listening to the programme if you want to hear those artists, won't you? Record now, and this is one, I don't think I played it last night, might have been last week, but it's ever so nice. It's Mike Batt and Friends, and it's called Lady of the Dawn.
Strange, uncertain game.
That's Mike Batt and Friends. I'm not sure who the Friends are on that particular record. A song called Lady of the Dawn, which Mike Batt wrote, which I think is lovely. It's nearly 2:30, so in a moment we'll be hearing from Ruth Cubbin, who'll be playing us more music. But before that, the second of our featured artists this weekend, a chap called Hedley Kay. Now, this piece of music is magic. Well, that's what it's called anyway.
You're a light that will shine every day through my window. You're a river of love that will never run dry. If I am restless to walk by a misty blue ocean, I will find it in you when I look in the blue of your eyes. You to me are magic, an ever-shining star. I've only one ambition, to be just where you are. You to me are magic, you're every song I sing. You to me are ecstasy, you are a song that I sing when I don't have you near me. A light in the darkness that shines until daylight appears. You're someone to cling to when everyone else keeps on drifting. You You are the one who can chase away all of my fears. You to me are magic, an ever-shining star. I've only one ambition, to be just where you are. You to me are magic, you're every song I sing. You to me are ecstasy, you are
Hedley Kay and Magic. That's a pretty nice song, that. Hedley wrote that himself. We'll be hearing some more from him later on in the programme. But with the time at coming up to 28 minutes to 3 o'clock, it's time to hear from Ruth Cubbin, and she's going to be talking about folk, the counterculture. First, some music.
Little for the state of rock and roll in 1962 that Tommy Rowe was the most popular artist of that year. A rather colourless product of the rock machine, Tommy Rowe was nevertheless voicing an unconsciously prophetic note in his smash hit The Folk Singer, looking ahead as it did to a time when honesty and simplicity would be the watchwords of popular music, and even further ahead to the inevitable loss of innocence when the so-called simplicity would become no more than a money-making gimmick. Bob Dylan singing of better times and a better world in times they are a-changing can be seen now in retrospect as just another naive visionary of the 60s. Times never changed that much. But it's true that there was certainly a change of outlook around this time, the early 60s, which prompted, among other things, momentous happenings in the now established rock and roll culture. In Britain there were the Beatles. In America there was folk. And indeed American rock and roll was ripe for folk. The giants, Buddy Holly and Jerry Lee Lewis, were either dead or in jail, and manufactured stars like Fabian, Frankie Avalon or Tommy Rowe were churned out by the cartload for chart purposes. Rock and roll seemed for the present to have lost its guts and its integrity. Folk music was indulged in as a kind of obscure subculture in the Cambridge-based revival of 1958 in the States, or as the Celtic hootenanny of the UK. But it was hardly represented at all in the charts. Folk music to the teenagers of 1958 was a bearded man with a pint pot in his hand, or Harry Belafonte and the Song of Bernadette. Yet by 1962, folk music was in the charts and holding its own amongst the Beach Boys and Bobby Sox and the Blue Jeans. Its magic rise to commercial popularity was due mainly to the charisma of two personalities, Joan Baez and Bob Dylan.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Pop music, like any culture, loves a change, and the wind of change was certainly blowing in 1962. Take pop fashions, for instance. Anybody who was anybody in the early 60s pop world was, to say the least, snazzily dressed. Publicity photos showed dapper suits and neat dark ties for the chaps. full petticoats and carefully lacquered backcombing for the ladies. Nobody is tatty. Even the Beatles' only concession to the casual are suits without collars. But here out of the blue is Bob Dylan, fag dangling from the lips, a hat that would have better graced a ship's boiler room, and, of course, the inevitable jeans. Elvis had done the thing before, of course, but this time the appearance of a shabby male singer was backed up by the rise of a truly shabby female. Joan Baez ignored the perm and the flick-up and let her hair down, literally. The natural look, together with a natural voice that we all know about, was an instant commercial turn-on. Singing was okay for Joan Baez, of course, but Dylan's natural voice was less instantly appealing. His gimmick, do-it-yourself words and do-it-yourself music, plus engaging homespun philosophy, tend to sound corny these days. But at the time, they smacked of the lonely genius and were hugely successful. Dylan needed only a guitar and a harmonica to get his effect. Joan Baez needed even less. Indeed, much of her work was completely unaccompanied and sung in the style of English or American balladeers of an earlier age.
Oh, hard is the fortune of all womankind. She's always controlled, she's always confined. Controlled by her parents until she's a wife. A slave to her husband the rest of her life. Oh, I'm just a poor girl, my fortune is sad. I've always been courted by the wagoner's lad. He's courted me daily, by night and by day. And now he is loading and going away.
Another phenomena of the folk revival was the social conscience. Songs like that one, dealing with the age-old predicament of women, or laments on human hardship, were the most common subjects for the traditional folk song. The contemporary folk singer took the same line, with a modern slant, so that the traditional anti-war song, for instance, became an anti-nuclear war song. Traditional folk sentiments were given a modern idiom and a modern framework, and the protest song became the anthem of the folk singer. The oversimplified life of Tommy Rowe's folk singer, the idealism, the purity and the naturalness of the folk movement that Joan Baez seemed to personify and Bob Dylan to emulate, turned quickly to moonshine in the wake of a generation of spin-offs. By the mid-60s, folk music was also pop, the newest fad for every Tom, Dick and Harry to have a stab at. Even the Beatles included an obligatory folk-style number on their Help album, Hey, You've Got to Hide Your Love Away. Dylan and Baez clones, such as Donovan and Julie Felix, sprouted the length of the United Kingdom. In the States, long hair and shaggy coats were the watchwords of rather average pop folk groups like Sonny and Cher, who flourished less by their talent than by their own brand of folk chic. By the beginning of the 70s, the whole thing was on the way out, in a haze of flower power and folk rock. Predictably, folk wasn't commercial enough to endure its own exploitation, if you like, and collapsed under the weight of it. Both Bob Dylan and Joan Baez have survived the collapse, in a sense, by remaining themselves. Dylan continues to make his own music, without much regard to the foibles of pop fashion. Baez continues to use her music, in all sincerity, as a vehicle for her political beliefs, a potent weapon for social change. The folk craze is well over, but in Joan Baez, the traditional ideals of the folk movement, humanity, simplicity and integrity, still survive in a way that they never could in the wicked world of popular music.
You must leave now, take what you need, you think will last. But whatever you wish to keep, you better grab it fast. He understands your orphan with his gun.
Crying like a fire in the sun.
It's All Over Now, Baby Blue, sung by Joan Baez and Bob Dylan. And thank you very much to Ruth Cubbin. That was a very interesting 10 minutes. Took me right back to the 60s, that did. Lost Without Your Love is next, the David Gates song. But performed this time not by David Gates, but the Mike Sam Singers.
Can't have it back. One.
the Mike Sam Singers Lost Without Your Love. I've got a letter here from Mrs. F. Fellows, who lives in Rastrick, Brighouse, West Yorkshire. I once bought a dog from somewhere near Rastrick in Brighouse, and of course there's a Rastrick and Brighouse brass band and all that kind of stuff. Great place, that. Anyway, Mrs. Fellows says, "Dear Liz, to Liz Allen, Madam," being awfully formal. We're not that formal on this programme, Mrs. Fellows. It's all first names round here, you know. Anyway, she says, "Is it possible you could play a record on Boxing Day for my grandson, David Field, who lives at Farnborough near Bath? David will be 14 on the 26th, and this is to let him know that he's not forgotten, even though he's unable to be with us this Christmas." OK, so this is from Gran and Grandad Fellows. For you, David Field, happy birthday, happy 14th birthday. Hope you'll like the next song. It's from Janice Ian. It's rather a sad song, but it's quite nice. Also, hello to John Saunders. Now, John is the John Saunders who lives in Yeovil in Somerset, and he has a message here that people next door ought to be listening to. OK, got their attention. They all leapt up like anything then. John says, "I believe it was the late Sir Winston Churchill who said, 'Never has so much been owed to so few.' Of course, I'm referring to your delightful, young, glamorous knights of the wee small hours. Who else but..." Now, wait for it, Liz. Please be patient, dear. "Yes, of course, you were right the first time. It's the T.O.'s. 'Happy Christmas, boys,' he says. 'Thanks for keeping the girl in good spirits. Keep it up in 1983. And I shall echo that. Happy Christmas, fellas, from me and from John Saunders. That's very nice of you, John. Thank you. Now, the record that we've got for you is from Janice Ian, very talented lady, composes all the material that she records. And this song, it's a song I first heard, actually, sung by Joan Baez. And then I realised it was Janice Ian's composition, so I dug out Janice's own version of it. As I say, it's quite a sad song. It's about somebody who isn't there and she'd like them to be. Janice Ian and Jessie. Jessie, come home. There's a hole in the bed where we slept. Now it's growing cold. Hey, Jessie, your face in the place where we lay by the hearth, all apart. It hangs on my heart, and I'm leaving the light on the stairs. No, I'm not scared. I wait for you. Hey, Jessie, Jessie, the floors and the boards, recalling your steps. And I remember too, all the pictures are fading and shaded in gray. But I still set a place on the table. Jessie, I'm lonely, come home. Jessie, the spread on the bed,
is like when you left. I've kept it up for you, and all the blues and the greens have been recently cleaned, and it's seemingly new. H.S. me and you will swallow. Do up my hair and sleep unaware. Jesse, lonely, come home. Song
called Jessie, sung by Janice Ian. What a lovely voice that lady has. Somebody told me once that she uses a very special microphone, a microphone designed for flutes, to get that quality in her voice. I don't know whether that's true or not, but I thought it was quite interesting. Now, if you'd like a mention on the programme next weekend, I won't be here because Bill Reynolds will be taking over the weekend programmes for January, and then I'll be back in February doing the weekends, along with Colin Berry and David Bellin doing the other nights during the week. And Bill will be along with Patrick Lunt and Charles Nove, that's right. So it's all swap around again next week. So if you want to mention next weekend, write to Bill Reynolds, OK? Good. Now then, a chap called David Macbeth is going to sing for us with the Tom Steer Orchestra. I think you know the tune, don't you?
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other. Love and marriage, love and marriage, it's an institute you can't disparage. Ask the local gentry and they will say it's elementary. Try, try, try to separate them, it's an illusion. Try, try, try and you will only come to this conclusion. Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. Dad was told by mother, you can't have one, you can't have none, you can't have one without the other. Try, try, try to separate them, it's an illusion. Try, try, try and you will only come to this conclusion. Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. Dad was told by mother, you can't have one, you can't have none, you can't have one without the other.
David Macbeth with the Tom Steer Orchestra and Love and Marriage. Now, if you'd like to write into the programme, whichever presenter is doing it, I'll give you the address. It's You and the Night and the Music, BBC Radio 2, London, W1A4WW. Now, the next piece of music is one that I've chosen. It's from Daryl Hall and John Oates, and it's a song that I want to play specially for you, because it has a little message in it. So this is from me to you, just for being there.
Thank you. for spending one day with a stranger. Good morning, hello, choose a color, carnation, we'll walk along down around the pond, up the hill, bricks and steeples, it's not all gone, I recall. Thank you for walking, thank you for spending one day with a stranger. Thank you for talking,
thank you for talking,
in showing the way to a stranger. Whining and dining from bags by the river, a sunset song.
It's cooler up here.
We sat on a wall, rest our feet, touch our noses, then slow poke on. Oh, I recall,
I recall.
One red carnation, the color for April, and apples and wine. I suppose it was white, but I needed the rhyme.
It's 3 o'clock. This is Nick Jackson with the news. A new report from the American Central Intelligence Agency says that the Soviet economy has been growing steadily for the past 30 years and now compares favorably with that of many other industrial nations. The CIA report was published by a Congress committee in Washington. Its chairman summed up the document's findings by implying criticism of President Reagan's assessment of Soviet weakness. He said the Russian economy was a strong one, and it would take more than talk from the Americans to undermine it. In Mexico, human rights organizations say 500 people have disappeared because of their political beliefs. Many are said to be left-wingers. All those who have disappeared are said to have gone within the last 10 years. The authorities in Nicaragua say 5 anti-government terrorists have been killed in a gunfight with the security forces. The government say the terrorists were planning to plant explosives in children's Christmas toys. The Greek Prime Minister, Mr. Papandreou, has said he'll lift restrictions currently preventing some 30,000 political refugees and their families from returning to Greece. Most of those affected are former communist guerrillas who left the country after losing the civil war in 1949. At home, officials from 4 unions in the coal industry meet later today to debate a call for a picket of all pits in the Scottish coalfield over the plan to close Kinneil Colliery. Yesterday, 11 miners ended a 5-day sit-in at Kinneil, but an unofficial strike by all miners at the colliery is to continue. 2 men are being questioned in connection with the death of a 60-year-old man at Gainsborough in Lincolnshire. Mr. Clarence Coulters was found in the kitchen of his home with severe head injuries on Christmas Eve. 2 middle-aged brothers died in a fire at their home at Maida Vale in West London last night. The cause of the blaze is not known, but police say there are no suspicious circumstances. The names of the 2 men have not been released. In the United States, about 100 prisoners were involved in a riot at a jail in Virginia. One man was stabbed to death and several others were injured. The cause of the trouble is unknown. Well, that's it for now. We'll have more news for you at 4 o'clock, but now we turn to cricket. And England, having been put into bat by Australia, had reached 56-2 at lunch on the opening day of the 4th test in Melbourne. The latest news of their innings comes from Peter Baxter.
Moment are 70-3. They lost their 3rd wicket to the 2nd ball after lunch when David Gower edged a ball from Rodney Hogg outside the off stump to Marsh, a very straightforward catch, and Gower had gone for 18 and the 3rd wicket had fallen with that lunchtime score still there, 56-3. Earlier in the morning, Fowler had lasted only 27 minutes before he was caught a clever fine diving catch to his right by Greg Chappell off the bowling of Hogg for 4, and that was 11-1. Cook went just about 50 minutes later, caught by Chappell as well, a more straightforward catch this as he made a drive well away from him, this time off the bowling of Hongside, and Cook was out for 10, that was 25-2, but then Gower and Tavare put together a stand up till lunchtime of 31 in 42 minutes, and Gower was looking in full command. Tavare perhaps a little less so, he was beaten quite a few times, but he's still there at the moment, 18 not out. Lamb, the new batsman, is 11 not out. He started magnificently by driving Hogg for 4 and made 9 of his first 3 balls. He's 11 not out. And England, at the moment, about 25 minutes after lunch, are 70-3.
All sounds very exciting out there, doesn't it? So England, 70-3. We'll be hearing another report from Peter Baxter in about an hour.
BBC Radio 2. Thank you.
Frank Chaxfield conducting the radio orchestra, and I've got my love to keep me warm. Jimmy Sinclair lives in Edinburgh, and Jimmy has written to me with an entry for the brain sharpener competition, which is in tomorrow's programme, but he finishes his letter by saying, "Would it be at all possible to have a signed photo of you, please? I have written before, but nothing." Well, Jimmy Sinclair, that would be because I haven't sent any out for a while. I'm going to have a session soon, honestly, in the new year. Well, actually, later on this morning after the programme, because the pile has got somewhat high. So it won't be long now, Jimmy, and apologies for the delay, but it's all my fault, because I haven't really had time to get down to the office work kind of things recently. But I will put your letter on top of the pile and I'll get a photograph off to you this week, OK? Right. Now, who's this? Stan. No surname, no address. Just, "Dear Liz, I'm a night security officer and I listen to most of your programmes. I wonder if it's possible for you to play me a Jim Reeves or Harry Belafonte record in one of the late night programmes soon." Short answer to that, Stan. No, you'll have to make do with Jerry Rafferty instead. Hope you like him. I do. This is Right Down the Line.
You know I need your love. You got that hold over me. Long as I got your love, you know that I'll
Jerry Rafferty and Right Down the Line. And right on the line, well, on the chair, actually, sitting opposite me, David Babsky. Hello, David.
Hello, Liz. How are you?
Have you had a happy Christmas?
Yes, I have. I haven't really done very much myself. I've been recovering from all the hard work I've been doing during the week. So it's been a lazy Christmas.
Oh, well, that's quite a nice kind of Christmas to have. What do you think of the overall standard of the entries to the photographic competition?
Well, I am overwhelmed. First of all, I never expected so many people to send in photographs, and I certainly never expected that we'd see such good photographs as we did do. And we spent hours the other evening, didn't we, sorting through them?
Hours and hours. For those who didn't hear me just mention it the other day, actually, we've had well over 1,000 pictures. So it was quite a lot to go through.
I certainly never expected that response. So thank you very much to everyone who sent in pictures, whether we're able to give you a prize or not. It was tremendous just to look through them and see what talent there is out there.
It's marvellous. Well, when you think that practically, well, every family in the country owns at least one camera, whatever kind of camera it is, there you go.
Yes, and I think that there's a great deal of talent to be encouraged. So although we were thinking originally, weren't we, Liz, I think we were going to give about 2 prizes.
But originally, yes.
The number has gone up to where we've got 1, 2, I've lost count now, but we're going to give a great many more than we'd originally expected because there were just so many pictures which needed an award of some sort or another.
And one of the problems as well, I think, is that there are so many very close runners-up.
There are, yes. I know, it was heartbreaking, really, after we'd looked through them and looked through them again and a third time to
and
try
a fourth.
And yes.
Oh.
And we just had to make some kind of a decision and weed out a few. Well, I suppose weed is the wrong word, really, because they were all so marvellous. But we did have to decide which ones could have some kind of a prize and which couldn't. But it was really heartbreaking to make the decisions.
Well, we'll pause there for some music and give you a chance to sort through those piles of photographs in front of you and get them into the right order.
Yes.
And then I'll come back to you. So, meanwhile, it's the Jim Lawless Quintet and Days of Wine and Roses. Well, I'm not sure about the roses today, but there's plenty of wine flowing. Jim Lawless Lawless Quintet. Yes, Quintet. It's a bit lawless in the studio at the moment. Talk about chaos. I shall open David's microphone so you can hear him frantically.
Oh, yes.
Still going through these envelopes in front of him. We're trying to find the winner. I'll come clean. We've lost him.
He's actually pointing at me as well. If I sounded as if I was disappearing into the floor before, it was because the microphone was slowly tilting down.
Oh, well, you've had,
to follow it.
You've had a previous experience with the chair that collapsed underneath
right.
you,
did,
so
yes.
it's kind of in keeping, really, isn't it?
But now we've found the winner, and after all that that heart-searching and all that deliberation the other evening, we came up with John Purnell of Cambridge Road, King's Heath, Birmingham, who sent a magnificent set of, well, it was only three photographs, and oddly enough, I know so many people sent in colour pictures, but these were black and white pictures, and so simple, so straightforward, that after all the thinking and all the eliminating rounds, we decided that these had to be the winners.
I'll say here, simple and straightforward, yes, but very powerful.
They are, yes. It's very difficult to describe them, of course. One of them is just a straightforward photograph of a young girl just sitting, I think she must be sitting on the ground, and there's just some panelling behind her, and she's just looking straight into the camera. There are no funny expressions and no little giggles and no smiles, but it's just a simple, straightforward, very friendly look directly at the photographer. And, well, in fact, directly at us, because we are looking at the photographs now. And another one is a picture of a fellow, I think he's snoozing, he's sort of slumped in a chair in the distance, and we're looking at him through one, two, maybe three door frames. So he's about 20 feet away, and above him there's a large poster, as big as he is, of just the head of James Dean. You remember James Dean, the movie star?
Yes.